Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for that introduction. My name is Joanne Huck, and I will be talking today about understanding family support for Filipino families dealing with breast cancer and other chronic illness. So just to let everyone know, I have no personal financial relationships that are related to this presentation. So a bit of the overview of what we'll be covering today. We'll talk a little bit about the background about why looking at breast cancer and chronic illness in the Filipino community is so important. A little overview of our study and the objectives, a brief coverage of the methodology, and then the bulk of the presentation will be our main findings, which are our central concepts, and then those are further parsed out into sub-themes with quotations giving examples of those sub-themes. And finally, we'll talk about the conclusion and implications of this work. So a quick background, as was mentioned earlier, Asians in the United States are the fastest growing minority group, yet the amount of research that's devoted to studying the health of this population is disproportionately small. Among Filipinas, breast cancer is the number one cause of cancer death. And then in addition to breast cancer, older Filipinos have the greatest number of chronic diseases, such as diabetes and high blood pressure, as compared to other Asian ethnic groups. Filipinos, from a recent study, Filipinos have one of the highest incidence and prevalence of diabetes among all ethnic groups, so not just among Asians. And as compared to Chinese and Vietnamese women, Filipinas have the highest percentage of living with two chronic diseases. So this is more than just breast cancer or diabetes, this is multiple chronic illnesses. So here is a diagram of our study. So the results that I'm going to be talking about are part of the third phase in a larger community-based participatory research. That's why the arrows pointed to the third circle. The first phase of the study was ethnographic research, looking to understand the influence of culture on the meaning of survivorship. So we worked with Filipino breast cancer survivors and their families and caregivers. The second phase of the study was establishing a community advisory board to help with the interpretation of the results from the first phase of the study, as well as to help develop a model of care that is culturally meaningful for these Filipinos and that would be sustainable for the community. And the third phase, which again is what I'm going to focus on today, we interviewed 10 families of breast cancer survivors and focused on how different families dealt with the breast cancer while also managing all of the other illnesses that their family was dealing with. Our research question for this phase of the study was, how does the presence of multiple chronic illnesses within the family impact support dynamics in Filipino families? And I really want to emphasize that the reason why the third phase of the study included both breast cancer and other chronic illnesses was informed by what we found in the first two phases of the study, and that looking at just breast cancer would really be denying the reality of what these Filipino families were living with. So it was important to look at all the illnesses. We further parsed out our main research question into objectives. We want to be able to understand what support looks like in the Filipino family. We want to be able to describe caregiving patterns of children. And we want to understand the transmigration, meaning between the Philippines and the United States, the transmigration factors that influence the caregiving process. So families were identified through the Filipino Senior Research Center, which was our community partner in this study. They were also identified through earlier phases, the two other phases of the study, or through community social events. 11 families volunteered, however, 10 were included in this phase due to the health of one of the survivors at the time of the interview. Interviews were conducted between August 2010 and August 2011 in either English or Tagalog, depending on the preference of the interviewee, and all interviews were translated into English and digitally recorded. And then AtlasTI was used to organize data and facilitate the analysis. And all transcripts were coded by myself and then reviewed by all other members of the team. So here's just a quick look at the study participants. We had 49 participants in the 10 interviews. You can see that two-thirds of the participants were female. The majority of participants were in their 60s, although the age range was 20s to mid-80s. All of the participants were Filipino. Even the one biracial participant was half Filipino, half African American. The mean years lived in the United States was about 26, and 80% of the participants spoke English with their doctors and nurses. So just to emphasize again that no one family or no family was dealing with just one illness. Here's just a little sample of all the different illnesses that we experienced participants talking about in their interviews. So here's just a diagram of the results that I'll go through. You can see the orange blocks are the central concepts, so those are kind of our main findings. And then the blue blocks are our sub-findings within each of those central concepts, and I'll go through each of them one by one. So for our first finding, we found that the family was responsible for caregiving. Whenever we would ask participants who their caregivers were, it always came down to family. Family's the one who cares for me. But when we further explored that, we saw that there was this incorporation of non-biological relatives into the family unit, which essentially means that when these participants were talking about their family, they weren't always talking about people who were related to them by blood. Sometimes they would be talking about neighbors or their best friends. Or even in this first example, we have a woman who has breast cancer herself and was formerly a caregiver for this man, Jay. And in the quote, we can see it says, "Now Jay called 911. That's why I'm very grateful for that old man. He helped me even though it was very hard for him. I thought about my family, but I had nobody. I didn't have a place to go. Then Jay told me, just stay here." So Jay was a patient of hers who helped her, who put a roof over her head and helped her through her illness, and she considered him family because of what he had done for her. Our next example was an older Filipino gentleman who had suffered a heart attack and was dealing with the lifestyle changes that he had to go through post-surgery. And our field notes describe, he said that he gets a lot of emotional support from their neighbors. He does not hesitate to tell anybody about his surgery. So both of these examples show people that were supportive outside of the immediate blood relatives in these persons' treatments and cares. Another theme that we saw through under family responsibility for caregiving was that older siblings were often taken care of by younger siblings. So both of these quotes were Filipino women who have breast cancer and really relied heavily on their younger siblings. The first quote reads, "It was okay, it was just me and my crybaby sister. The rest has family already. Only the two of us that don't have family yet. I'm the eldest, she is the youngest." And when another woman was asked how she accesses her healthcare services and makes it to appointments, she responded, "I called my sister already because she has a car, the youngest, so she will take half day or whole day off. I have another sibling, the one in San Ramon, she will go with me too. She's younger than me." So both of these participants heavily relied on younger siblings to access their care and help them through their illness. The next main theme that we saw was that looking at the caregiving patterns of children, these participants heavily relied on their children, and women, or participants in general, both men and women, often talked about the marital status of their child as a big factor on whether or not they felt comfortable asking them for care. Often, as you can see in this first quote, women didn't feel comfortable asking their children who were married to care for them because they understood that they had their own family, the next generation, to take care of, and then that would be having kind of a double responsibility, taking care of your children and your parents. The first woman describes, "Now you have your mother, you have your father, but you have your own family to take care of. You mean to say you will be 24 hours with your parents? I don't think so. You have your own family to take care of." And so we can see that this was a sentiment, and although women expressed this, the reality was is that sometimes they didn't have a choice. All of their children were married, and they had to rely on their married children. So even if women felt this way, sometimes they had no choice. And here we have another woman who is talking about her sister who has dementia. And she was the primary caregiver for her sister, but when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, she was unable to, and her nieces and nephews took on the role. So, no, because the sister was there too, the guy's sister too, they were both single, so they all chipped in. So all of her single nieces and nephews were taking care of their mother. And along that same vein, we see that caregiving responsibilities are assumed by both sons and daughters. Our first example is a younger Filipino woman who is talking about taking care of her parents. Her mother was diagnosed with colon cancer, and then subsequently, her father was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And so she says, my dad didn't have anything. But then my mom, she ended up getting Social Security disability. I applied her for like Medi-Cal and the same thing with my dad. So she's applied for both of her parents' health insurance and helped them navigate that. And we all know how important it is to have health insurance in this country. Our next example shows a woman whose son is taking care of herself and her husband who has dementia. This woman says, my son is the one that really handles everything. He is the provider. Papa, even just for medicine or anything, he calls Budoy this and Budoy that, everything. His full attention is focused on us. So a factor that I want to really underscore here is that gender plays a big role. We saw that there was a difference between single children and married children in that both sons and daughters took care of their parents when they were single, but when children were married, the responsibility felt more heavily on the daughters. So married daughters were the ones that are taking care of their parents. Our last finding and concept was transmigration and caregiving, which really boiled down to the continuation of responsibilities from the Philippines. So both of these quotes actually are from breast cancer survivors, and you will see that in both of these, the breast cancer survivors are they themselves the caregivers for other people in their family. They're caring for their children or they're caring for their parents, and this is really important finding from our study. Our first woman says, sometimes when of course they have a job, I send them some money to them. We even went to the Philippines for vacation because the kids want to see me and my family, that I have a problem. Then they will really see if I'm not that knocked down. So she had to travel to the Philippines to kind of show her family that she was okay right after her cancer surgery. This next woman came from the Philippines for her father, who was had cardiovascular illness and wasn't expected to live very much longer. So because my dad was 50-50, his case manager looked for me in the Philippines. She was able to contact me through what my dad told him. Then she told me his situation and that he wanted me to come over here. Lisa's the one who handled everything. So this woman had to leave her children in the Philippines to come here to take care of her father. Her father actually fortunately got a lot better and was fine, but the woman was diagnosed with breast cancer while she was here and therefore had to stay here for treatment and was unable to continue to financially support her children, which caused her children to have to drop out of school back in the Philippines. So we can really see here that even the breast cancer survivors are caregivers in a lot of different ways for other members of their family. So in conclusion, our Filipino families juggle multiple chronic illnesses. So support services that are focused on breast cancer alone really miss this complex structure of caregiving. And then of course, including the fact that the caregiver the breast cancer survivor is responsible for caregiving herself, which you just saw. Marital status, birth order, gender, and migration all influence caregiving practices for families with multiple chronic illnesses. So we really need to look at the context in understanding support. Our study contributes to a very limited body of literature on Asian immigrant women and focuses on more than one illness. And it really highlights the importance of this non-biological relative, so the friend or the former patient or the neighbor that I mentioned. This is a great support resource, and it moves beyond this notion that spouses provide the most support, which is what's commonly found in the literature. And further research is needed to understand the ways of extending this relatedness beyond the family. So we can incorporate healthcare and social service providers into this role of non-biological relative, and therefore we can increase the support networks that these families have and lessen the burden on family members themselves. And I would like to thank our community partners and all of the families who shared their stories and our funders for making all of this possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Duran. Now, more questions, please, from the audience? Okay. I would like to invite the panel. Okay. Would you like to come to the front, the panel of speakers?
She has a question for the panel.
Yes, you had a question.
So I'm glad you covered this, but were majority of your participants first generation, second generation immigrant families? And my follow-up question to that would then be, if they were, do you think these findings would be generalizable to
Sure. So there was a really big variety in the families that we interviewed because often we're interviewing multiple generations at the same time. So we're interviewing the parents who had migrated here themselves and the children who were born here, and even sometimes in case like the grandchildren. So it was across all the generations. And I can think of one specific instance in which like the generational difference was really pertinent. We were talking about, or the interview was talking about, support services and how they can be designed. And some of the members who were of the older generation were saying that the support services really should be Filipino specific, and they should be for a Filipino community, and providers should be speaking Tagalog and those kinds of things, and they were all in agreement. And then the nephews and the people of the younger generation were actually disagreeing and saying that they felt that although that would be great, there would be a lot of benefit in extending services beyond to just include more than just Filipino community, because you'd be able to strengthen your networks and find a lot more resources by kind of mingling. And so that was one example of like a very big generational difference between the families.
What do you think of the most important intervention component in churches where the management of time? You studied more focusing on the preventive care, and when I
I think that's a great question. I think I cannot really tell you for sure which component would be more important than others, because our studies that have been done are not really equipped to answer the question. However, personally, I think knowledge is one thing. However, in terms of sustaining and maintaining changes that have been made as a result of your knowledge increase would be only possible when there would be additional sources of support. In terms of chronic disease management context, I believe ongoing support from counselors, whether the counselors are community health workers or other healthcare professionals such as nurses or other counselors. I think the fact that you have somebody out there other than yourself who sort of joined the journey of disease management really helps you maintain that spirit that this is important, that I keep maintaining healthy diet and exercise and measuring my blood pressure and things like that. So I think, again, that's a great question. In terms of the dosing, although you didn't ask that, but I think based on our existing trials, we've tried bi-weekly counseling versus monthly counseling, no difference. So as long as I have somebody out there who keeps me in one's mind, I think that really makes a huge difference.
I have one more question. I'm a therapy student at the University of Hawaii, and unlike other states in the mainland, we didn't have any infrastructure to support Korean population. Mm-hmm.
Another very good question. She's asking all these right questions. Time pretty much is one of the biggest challenges, I think, because as an academician, we deal with a lot of multiple priorities and tasks. And oftentimes, when in my case, when I was trying to build relationship with potential community partners, they often ask me to work together in terms of their grant writing, or when it is a church member, they would ask me to be out there to talk to their church membership on a variety of health topics. So I spent a lot of time initially when the relationship was being built over the weekend and other times to talk about and respond to their needs. That is one thing. And also identifying credible partners, because oftentimes community organizations, they often come and go because of funding stream. And I believe that has been identified as one of the main challenges that is faced by many organizations, community-based organizations in the nation. So one of the things that can be done, of course, is to help them with grant writing capacity. Let them know that you also are dedicated to the success of the partnership, other than anything else.
Any more questions? We have time for a few more. Yeah.
I believe so. So the reason, like the initial start of this project was the work of the Filipino Senior Resource Center with UCSF, and it was in the end goal was to be able to develop a support model that would be useful, sustainable, culturally appropriate for this community. And so we were doing these, you know, the ethnographic research, the formation of the community advisory board in order to understand what that support model would look like. And in all of the interviews, we got a lot of really good examples and feedback of what the families wanted, what they thought was beneficial. So now it'll be a matter of securing funding and working with PSRC to kind of get that implemented.
Anyone else? I would like to thank all of you for attending this session. Very interesting topics and, you know, great panel here. And also I want to encourage you to keep submitting abstracts for next year. I'm the program chair for the API caucus, and the call for abstracts already will be out in December. So we receive, you know, excellent abstracts. Unfortunately, we only have, you know, some mini sessions allotted to the API caucus. So, but we, you know, we try to, you know, accept a lot of high quality abstracts. And I think Rina has another announcement here. And I would like to repeat, yeah, that, you know, I announced earlier about our, you know, the invitation to our business meeting and social. Karina?
Thank you.